Hi, and welcome to the next episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. It's an exciting episode. We're going to talk about the Windows Store. I'm here with Arik Cohen. He's a program manager with the store team. Arik, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Jerry. I'm excited to be here.
Okay, so let's start. Before we start with the store, let's start with you. Tell us kind of who you are.
Okay, I guess my name is Arik Cohen. I'm one of the leads on the store team. I've been at Microsoft at 16 and a half years now. So I came out of here out of school. I've worked on everything from the MSN shopping team. I was the group program manager there 10, 12 years ago. Then moved over back to kind of my dev roots and spent time on Avalon, WPF. So I was part of the team that brought WPF, the first versions of that out to market. And then I moved over to Windows in the user experience side and did some stuff on the user experience side. And then with Windows 8, as we were starting up the store effort, it seemed like a natural extension for me, where I sat there and said, I've done some of the dev platform stuff, I've done some of the user experience stuff with Windows Media Player and things there, and I've done stuff kind of in the shopping and commerce background. So it's been kind of fun, and we're really excited to have it out for market now.
Yeah, you're in the sweetest spot here. It's like the perfect Venn diagram of all of your skills combined.
Yeah, I'm done. Like, there's nothing for my career from here. So hopefully this one will be successful so I can stick around for a while.
Right. All right, so the Windows Store. Mm-hmm. Let's just start with, what is the Windows Store?
So the Windows Store is really kind of, for Windows 8, the reimagined way for how you get apps, right? You've probably used app stores on your mobile devices. And really, how do you bring that to the Windows ecosystem? How do you as a developer, write your app and get it out there for the hundreds of millions, billions of users of Windows worldwide. And as a consumer, how do you make it easy for you to get those apps, to acquire them, to pay for them? Near and dear to my heart, since the feature team that I own is really around kind of the commerce and licensing side of the apps that come from the store. And
so then the old way of getting, just to contrast, the old way of getting apps was we would just download an MSI or something like that.
The old way of getting apps was really varied, and it depended on what you could do, right? So if you're a big developer, you would go get your app on a CD and in Best Buy and in on this place. Or you'd go invest in your own electronic software delivery, which got you an MSI, and you had to do your own licensing pieces. You had to strike a deal with someone on how you're going to take credit cards, and it'll be different for how you do it in the U.S. versus in the U.K. versus in Japan versus China. So everybody kind of had to do all the homegrown stuff themselves, and people did it. I mean, all of us survived as developers for many a year, and we're able to create good business opportunities out of this, but yet you ended up having to spend a lot of time on stuff that wasn't your app, wasn't your idea, wasn't that. And really, that was one of the big things that we were looking at here is developers have great ideas. Developers have great apps. How do you let them spend more of their time on the apps and less of the time on the infrastructure? And how do I get an update out to my customers? And we really, I think as an industry, struggled on how we do that at scale. And that's really one of the big things that we were looking to try to help with.
So from a developer's perspective, now it's easier distribution across the world, right? Fulfillment of commerce as well, mm-hmm. update management. But it's not just a benefit to the developer, right? There's also benefit to the end user.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the fact that now pretty much every app has a Windows update, it has an app update service built into it, right? Everybody had to go build that before. Every app, you can see reviews, you can see ratings, you can give feedback back to the developer in a way. And good luck if you got the MSI from somewhere. I don't know how you got feedback back.
You scan it with your virus scanner.
You scan it. You know that it's met a certain set of security principles.
It's curated, principles. Right? That's a good word.
It's integrated, and it's one of those where it's a curated set of apps, right? So someone's looked at every one of these apps and says it does what it said it's going to do, so that there's a level of trust and confidence that that consumers have. And one of the things that we looked at with Windows 8 was an app model that made it that getting and trying and using a lot of these apps isn't going to put your machine at risk. That we've all heard and seen. situations where your machine isn't near as responsive 2 years later as it is the day you opened it. So how do you take apps that feel that have impact on the system that is much more known? And if you uninstall the app, the app's just gone, right? It's not, you don't have to worry as a consumer, did I get that service that was over there? And
that's right. So you can install it. It's still, and it protects your system. Yep. You can uninstall it, and you know it's clean. I mean, too many times I've gone to get an app. I see that it costs whatever it costs. So I go to some crazy website where it, you know, the last two letters of the domain or something I've never heard of. I download the same file. I run it. That's a huge risk I'm taking on my machine. Now there's trial edition.
On behalf of people that enjoy the mafia everywhere, thank you very much for doing that.
Well, <that's>,
Sorry, you're helping you're helping us in our quest for organized crime.
Well, you're right. I mean, there's a ton of ways in the old thing. Right, exactly. Not only that, an app in a millisecond can just absolutely trash your machine.
Yep.
An app that comes from the Windows Store, on the other hand, is
it runs in an isolated environment. It runs in its own what we call app container, and really the app model protects what it has access to. It can't see any of the files on your disk, right? So it can see the files that it brought down. And if it wants to have access to the documents,
to be fair, I could give it access.
You can give it access. It can declare it needs access so that you will know that before you do the installation.
Yeah.
But by default, an app does not have access to that. An app doesn't have access to the internet by default, right? It needs to request access, and you need to know this is an app that's going to act out to the internet. So you have as a user, you have a much greater level of control and understanding of what the app can and can't do.
There is so much value and so much change in the paradigm of the app here that it really is a new development paradigm as well. And that's what developers are seeing when they're building on WinRT. And this is really the reasoning behind it. I mean, that's what's important.
It's really around how do we get consumers to feel more comfortable trying and buying and using apps from the entire ecosystem. And as developers, we want to reach everybody, and we don't want to have to deal with getting people past that scary dialogue that says your machine may be owned now. And like, well, I wrote a game. I don't want someone to have to think about that.
And so some of those restrictions that are there protecting the user now gives even more capability to the user, because now you don't even have to be an admin to run something, and your administrator doesn't have to be afraid that everything that you install is going to wreck your machine. So now there's even more freedom to the user.
The way we kind of look at it is the surface area of these apps and what they can do and how it's contained, it should be safer than browsing the web.
It should be safer than browsing the web.
Yep.
Well, that is serious. Okay, let's talk about the store itself. So now I'm a developer. I know that there's a store out there. I want to get some apps out there to Windows.
Yep.
I know I'm going to need to put it on the Windows Store, right? Is there another mechanism out there too? Are there two stores?
So no, there is one store. So the Windows Store is the way to deliver Windows Store apps to Windows 8 machines. Now, if you want to continue using your existing mechanism, you've got an MSI, you've got a desktop app, you've got a web app, you've got your own mechanism, your own WPF app, .NET app, whatever it is, all those mechanisms continue to work across Windows 8.
And that's a valuable thing to developers who have already invested in that. Yeah. But it's also valuable in case somebody in an enterprise is listening to this too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, in an enterprise environment, I believe that Windows has an unsurpassed record of trying to keep backwards compatibility going. And if you've seen some of the blogs of like Raymond Chen and things like that, the steps that we go to ensure that are huge.
Yeah.
And we maintain that with Windows 8. Now, there is also the new thing of the Windows RT devices, which will not have all of those same capabilities.
But the store delivers to RT devices the same?
The store delivers to RT devices the same. It's really these desktop apps, these kind of apps that were built with Win32.net using the MSI technology and that those are the ones that will not be able to be installed on the Windows RT devices.
But if I do have a Windows 32-based app, can I use the store as a delivery mechanism?
So no. You can use the store as a discovery mechanism for your app. So you can get your app listed in the store, a desktop listing in the store that lets people find your app. And then you can go and you can give basically a link of where you want them to go to do the acquisition. But
So if I have a traditional desktop application, I put it in the store. The store is not going to sell it for me.
The store is not going to sell it. We're not going to fulfill it. We're also not going to take a cut on any sales there. It works exactly the same way as it was before. Only now you have kind of a listing service that makes it easier for users to discover that app.
Is there a certification process for those desktop apps that go in the store?
There is a certification process. It's very similar to the certification process that has existed for many moons for Windows, the logo kit. It's part of the same SDK, so you can run the same Windows app certification kit. You choose the desktop certification, and you'll need to approve the certification of that. That's really around proving that you do things correctly from a power management perspective.
You were talking about the certified for Windows logo.
Yep.
And so if my app doesn't have certified for Windows logo, it's not going to be in the store.
It's not going to be in the store.
So we can still give a pretty high level of confidence for the applications that we give that we list in the store that are for desktop.
Yes, I believe that. We want to see the good reputable apps from the good reputable devs. The irreputable devs like you, Jerry.
Yeah, like me?
Yeah. Well, but as long as we know it's Jerry, and and that's one of the things that it really the store provides, is that we have a relationship with each of the developers, right? So we and we've kind of vetted that you are who you say you are, and you have to kind of go through that validation, and then you're free to submit your apps.
Okay, so this is a leading question, Eric. So the store is available in the United States. And then what other countries?
So from a consumer perspective, I believe we're at over 220. Anywhere we're allowed to legally sell as a U.S.-based company.
Yeah.
There's a couple places that we're not worldwide.
220 different countries. And is it localized?
I'm sorry, it's markets or regions. Let me use the appropriate legalese on that, yes.
Right. So it's not a specific number. Just more than 220. Markets or regions, and is localized in their language?
So it is localized in every language that Windows is localized in. So it's not quite 220, but I believe you can get the Intuit version and if the ancient Greek one isn't out yet, the language pack for that is likely to show up. I probably shouldn't get quoted on those.
Pack.
I'm not actually doing the localization on those. But pretty much anywhere that Windows is localized.
And what about currency? Is it also in their local currency?
It is in, I think it's 60-plus local currencies around the world. It's not in every local currency. Some of them are ones where we don't have quite that interaction yet. We are looking to continue to grow that. So there's ones where we show pricing in local currency. There's ones where we can pay out to developers in a local currency. So the flip side of it is also what countries can a developer sign up from and to get paid from and to submit the apps.
Okay,
and,
tell me.
So that one, I believe it's at about around 120 countries, which we believe is pretty competitive with the offerings out there. We continue to aspire, we aspire to get that number to as close to all countries in the world as possible. And it's just every country has different
really
banking regulations.
It's really a balancing act of who you serve, right? You serve the developer and you serve the user. Mm-hmm. And from a competitive point of view, the store really is delivering, right? We're talking about these numbers, and out of context, you're like, wow, there's 60 and not 61, or there's 61, but I thought there was only 60. Those numbers, out of context may not make sense, but in a competitive landscape of the other stores on other platforms, we're unbelievable right now.
I think so, but the way I look at it is we're not at where we want to be yet, and we have stuff that we want to get better. The answer is I want to allow anybody that's using Windows to be able to buy an app that any other developer that uses Windows wanted to sell them. That's kind of the goal we have. Now, are we at everybody can do it? Well, no, not everybody has a credit card. Not everybody has this. Not everybody has that.
Right.
The penguins in Antarctica can't buy right now.
Sure. The penguin. When we do get the penguins.
Yeah.
All right. So
you joke, but I can talk about multiple bugs that we found around how do you do address formatting in for when you're entering your credit card details in Antarctica.
Come
That's the level of stuff we're due.
I think people don't realize the engineering effort in supporting the entire world. Yeah. Right?
I don't think we realized the engineering effort in supporting the entire world when we started it, which is part of the reason where we found issues in Antarctica and decided, I think we can be okay without selling apps in Antarctica. Right now.
We will make sure that this episode doesn't get watched in Antarctica, so they don't know.
They can watch it. And they can reach out, and there's workarounds for you.
There's workarounds. What we found out is that most people in Antarctica actually
have an address somewhere else.
Yeah, nobody's permanent. I'd like to meet that person. So the reality is, it's great to hear that the goal is universal coverage. Right, that's awesome. And right now the coverage is still remarkable. And all of that really translates to opportunity for developers. It's an extremely high opportunity.
Yes, it is. We think it definitely is. I mean, if you take a look at the adoption of Windows 7, where I think we're well over 600 million copies of Windows 7 out there. I don't remember the exact numbers off the top of my head.
We're past 700 million.
Oh, are we past 700 million?
Yeah, crazy.
You don't have the ticker going on behind you, so.
That's right.
So and we take a look at all those machines are capable of moving up to Windows 8. So there's a huge opportunity here.
That's right. And don't forget all those machines, and there's almost as many running Windows XP, and they're all ready to retire. And what are they going to be upgrading to? So there's tons of even more opportunity when you think of the whole landscape. Let me ask you about payment instruments. So I'm the consumer. I'm about to purchase. What do I pay with? Do I have to have a credit card? Is that what's going on?
Credit card or PayPal at this point in time. So you can support PayPal in, I don't remember the exact number of markets. PayPal isn't supported in every market worldwide, but everywhere that it is, we do support it.
And it's handled all through my my Microsoft account, my Live account.
So you log in with your Microsoft account. We will ask you to choose a payment instrument the first time that you try to make a purchase. You can add your credit card details at that point in time. It meets all the various local regulation rules. So in India, you need to go through a secondary authentication mechanism. Great, we got that taken care of for you. For PayPal, you have to do a one-time setup of hooking up your PayPal account with your Microsoft account. And then once you've entered those credentials, great. That can get kind of saved for use on future transactions.
Just click, click, click after that.
Yep.
So and because Windows 8 now is so deeply integrated with family safety, I can restrict my kids. They're not out there using you know, whatever to buy those. I can restrict also the types of apps, because apps that are in the store are categorized not only for what they actually do, but they're also categorized based on age.
Yep. So you can use the family safety to kind of set the parental controls for what level of apps you want them to be able to acquire. You don't want them to be able to acquire anything that, you know, is more than appropriate
like
for a 13-year-old.
Yeah, 14. There you go.
I don't remember what the exact age breakdowns are right now.
But to be fair and to be clear, the store is not going to be full of things that are over 17 either, right? Adult content isn't what goes in the store.
Adult content is not what goes in the store.
Yeah, which is great because it just adds to the level of trust. All right, so I put an app in the store. I want it to bubble to the top so people can see it so that I can sell my app. What are some of the tricks that you know to get me – I want to be featured. I want to be raised up in that list. How is it sorted?
So there's a couple different things. One, there's stuff – there's ways that we highlight the newest stuff, right? So you get some level of prominence just by being the latest thing that gets in there so people can get and see the newest apps that come in. It really boils down to – build a great app. That is the biggest thing that'll do it. So it combines things like the number of downloads. It combines things like the average review score. It combines things like the number of crashes that we got back from users and how stable the app has been for people. So it's really kind of combining all of those things. And there's a bunch of algorithms that we're continually tuning in that regard. And then there's also kind of merchandising opportunities where we have editors working kind of around the world and in a variety of different markets that are highlighting the best apps that they see.
Like an editor's pick sort of thing. And then how do you get picked, or is this just a matter of them recognizing your impact on that local market?
It's really a matter of them seeing that this is an app that's great in that market, that's what people are searching for, that's what people are looking for, or that's what people are rating really highly. One of the key tricks there is you want to be able to, you need to be able, in order to be featured like that, you need to support across all the platforms. So if you build something that's x86 only and won't run on the Windows RT device, you're not going to get featured in that regard. So one of the key tricks is make your stuff work everywhere that Windows 8 is going to be.
And no doubt the guidelines themselves will help that as well, right? Because the guidelines are breakable, right? If a developer doesn't want to follow the guidelines, we get it. But these are some of the things that play into who gets picked and featured.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and
because it plays into what's an excellent app, right?
I think there are explicit times when breaking from the guidelines is necessary in an excellent app.
That's right.
But there are also a lot of times where we break guidelines because we didn't know they were there, or because
as a developer, I'm worried, right? How many crashes I get? How many downloads I get? What type of analytics are given to me by the store? Do I have that sort of information?
You definitely do. So if you log into your dashboard on the store, you get access to kind of the number of downloads, the number of installs, the average app usage per day. You get access to a bunch of that stuff. There's probably in one of the supporting links here, we should point to the blog that kind of walks through a bunch of the analytics that's available to developers today. You also get crash reports. So you get, if you're an HTML5 and JavaScript app, you'll actually get which are the JavaScript exceptions that are happening most commonly for your app.
Nice.
If you're a native app or a C# or a C++ app, you'll actually get call stacks and dumps back that you can actually acquire.
This is very similar to the Windows Phone store as well, we're getting that back.
Yep, it's really around giving you the data that you need in order to make the next version of your app that much better.
Yeah.
And that is one of the core we kind of look at that as one of those base services that every developer had to build for themselves before.
Store analytics, is there an API? Can I pull those directly, or do I go to my dashboard?
You go to your dashboard right now. So there is no API to kind of pull all of those analytics. There is a way for all of the purchase transaction data and that for you to download that as kind of CSV and Excel files that you can then go do whatever processing you want on.
All right, so let's talk about purchase transactions. So let's just talk about first selling my app. I'm going to sell my app. Microsoft will fulfill that through, what do we call that, the Microsoft Commerce something or other?
Yeah, we have a commerce platform on our side, but I mean, basically, we take on the responsibility of doing that. When you sign up as a developer and you want to submit an app that is paid, so before you can submit a paid app, so before you get to choose a price other than free, before choosing one of those goes live in the store, you need to give us a couple of pieces of information. You need to fill out the appropriate tax information, because Uncle Sam wants to get
cut. That's right. Because we're going to make a lot of money. That's why.
Well, it's one of those. We need to know whether you're a U.S.-based corporation or you're coming in from internationally. And
if you're not in the U.S., obviously you're not going to put your tax information in.
You actually still have to fill out some tax information. It's just different tax information than a U.S. citizen would fill out.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine keeping all that straight for country to country to country?
And depending on that country, whether you declare a whether that country has a treaty with the United States implies whether or not income
has to get withheld. Which can change at any time, right?
So that's part of the complexity and the beauty of building kind of a global service here.
Yeah.
So you fill out your tax information. Another piece that's kind of important is you fill out your bank information because we'd like to know where to give you the money to. And then once you've done that, you can submit that app. And then every time a transaction happens, there's a record of that.
And what's the threshold for depositing? Does it have to get to a certain amount? Is it an amount of time?
Yeah, so it's a little bit of both. So it is $200 of aggregate transactions for that haven't been paid yet. So we try to pay you once a month. If you haven't hit your $200 yet, then we won't pay you at that point. And that's $200 gross, right? So if your app is listed at $1.99, then you need to have sold, 101 copies of the app, or in any of the currencies and how that maps to that. So we kind of map back via these price tiers back to your local currency, and we can show you what kind of the threshold is there. And that's $200 across all countries, across all currencies.
Now, I'm sure that if I make $200, I might sell my app for 101 of my apps. How much money am I actually getting? Microsoft's going to take some of this, right?
So Microsoft has a store fee of, by default, 30%. So you would get 70% of that. Once you hit $25,000 in sales, we'll switch that the store fee turns to 20%.
And so, that's 25,000
lifetime. Lifetime.
Lifetime, not month to month.
Lifetime of the app, right? So as soon if you got an app that, you know, is making a good little chunk of change every month, the first couple months you're going to make 70%, and hopefully very quickly there you're going to move to 80% on every transaction.
That's the most generous split of any other store in the ecosystem. I mean, it really is.
We think it's a great split for developers. I don't know what everybody else is doing as of when this airs, but we definitely think it's.
I have my
apps in there.
And okay, so I've got my 30-70 split or my 80-20 or my 20-80, and to be clear, that is not 80 to Microsoft and 20 to the developer.
No.
I
wouldn't have minded that. It might have gotten me an office with a window, but you know, no, it doesn't work that way.
Okay, let me ask two quick questions about pricing my app. First of all, can I have more than one price of my app?
So you can have one. The price will get localized and kind of the appropriate local price based on the price tier you selected. But you only can have one. You cannot have separate pricing per market.
Okay.
So there's one price. Now, you can have multiple in-app offers in your app. So you can continue to sell additional things, and those can have different price points, right?
And to be clear, those in-app offers, what you really mean is, like, picture there's a free Lite and Pro to your application.
Yep.
They get the free or maybe the Lite or whatever, and then in their app or in your app, you can then have them purchase or pay for that next level up. You enable all of these features to them. That's the in-app purchase
Exactly. That's the in-app purchase.
And that money or that price, that adds to the gross that gives me
that's,
that.
Again,
that
it's gross per app. So all the in-app offers roll into the gross for the app.
Still fulfilled through Microsoft, still handled all the local business and everything's great.
And I guess on the flip side, as a developer, we also handle for you what's the license there. So we tell you, you have an API that you can find out, has this user bought this? If so, so that you can make your fulfillment decisions. That works
and that's
even
important
when you're offline.
I might have it installed on two devices, and you'll tell me the same for both devices that way. They don't have to buy it on each of the devices. That's
correct.
Beautiful.
Yep.
And so can I do that? Can I have a price in my app where it flows from, like, say, across a family where I can sell my app to, you know, the parent and then the kids can use it?
So right now, the app is licensed for the user to install on 5 machines. So it is user-based.
Tied to that Microsoft account.
To that Microsoft account. But that Microsoft account can install it on 5 machines. So if I buy the app and I want to install it on my wife's machine, I can do that. If I want to install it in my wife's account on the shared machine, I can do that. If she wants to go buy another copy of it that she wants to manage, she can do that as well.
Wait, you can install it on your wife's machine in her account?
Yes. So if I have my wife log into Windows 8, launch the store, and then you go into settings and you do sign out, she can sign out, I can sign in, and I can install my apps on her account there.
Oh, that's nice.
So that's kind of also the way that we see some of the parental scenarios, right? Like my kid is not going to have may not have a Microsoft account. Or my kid might not have, it's not might not have, my kid does not have a credit card. She's fine.
She's fine.
And her credit rating, I can tell you right now, looking at the piggy bank, you know, the credit rating
credit
is probably
rating
not.
Credit rating is 5 as well.
Yeah, the credit is, the credit limit is low as well. So if she wants the paid app, she's going to ask me to come over. And
oh,
I
man,
can kind of
that
swipe
is
in
a
and do that.
Great scenario where I can totally put any app I want to on my kids' machines. Now, this is not an enterprise scenario, though. I can't necessarily go from machine to machine in enterprise. Plus, I'd run out of 5 pretty fast.
You'd run out of 5.
Is there an enterprise volume license option?
There is not an enterprise volume license option at this time. It's definitely something that we've heard some feedback on, and we'll take into consideration as we move forward.
What about coupons? Can I give away coupons to people so that some people can just type in something and get it for free?
No, right now you don't have, you as a developer don't have the ability to kind of gift or discount. You can change the price of your app at any point in time, right? So once you pick a price, it is not stuck at that price forever. So if you want to do something like, I want to have a sale where it's for free this weekend, you can go submit an update and set it up to kind of queue up for this weekend to go free. So you can do stuff of that nature, but you don't have the targeting like, Unfortunately, my app, I had to have my my mom buy it, right? So
yeah.
I wasn't able to give a free copy. And
unfortunately.
I did tell her I'd buy her a cup of coffee the next time she came out
right,
to visit.
Right, right. The and just as a note, apps can be free or they can be starting at $1.49 and go up to $1,000 basically.
Yep.
Yeah. Where do you think that $1.49 came from?
I mean, I think a lot of it is around the level of value that we think and expect developers to have for their apps. We don't
Good.
Want it to be a price to a race to the bottom of pricing.
Right, right.
I know that developers don't want that either. And if we did a bunch of research and it, like part of it is like let's get apps that people are willing to pay for.
Yep. If I do have a trial edition of mine, yep. which we all know a trial edition is really, you know, a very successful way of getting an app moving.
Yeah,
on
average right now,
just
to give you some stats on that,
yeah.
on average doing a trial edition on, for example, for Windows Phone drives about 7 times the revenue of an app that doesn't have a trial. Revenue.
If I do put it as trial, does the store see it then as free and listed it as free apps?
So it does. So there's actually a listing to see free and trial apps. So there's a filter to look at free and trial apps. And when you get to the app detail page, you can see both try and buy. And we have a couple different things that we do around trials, which is actually kind of interesting. One is the traditional kind of feature differentiated trial, which, you know, it's the light versus pro version. And it has a complete feature differentiation where the developer, we provide you a set of APIs that you can tell whether you're in trial mode and you can turn things on or off based on whether or not you're in trial mode.
Yeah.
We think that this is vastly superior both for developers and consumers than having a light and pro version in the store because there's only one code base you have to support. There's one set of updates that you have to support, and user state and user management moves as you move forward.
Yeah.
So if when I have the light version, I want to move to the pro version, I don't have to go re-enter all my data. I don't have to lose my level state, all that fun stuff that we've all struggled with in various different things. Or we have to go build, as developers, we go build a back-end sync. You know, hey, go enter this ID into your pro version so you can re-import the data. So
this is the in-app purchase stuff we're talking about.
This is even so we have both in-app purchase and we have a concept of a trial conversion. So
trial conversion.
So this is converting from the trial to the full version.
Yep.
And you can then do in-app purchases to continue selling and adding functionality over time, even on your pro version.
The next 10 levels and the next 10
levels.
I can sell and sell and sell, but to be fair, the in-app purchase mechanism that we have, it's not meant to be a catalog mechanism, right, where I can sell an unlimited number of commodities?
It is not right now kind of a catalog, kind of consumable, like let me go buy another 10 star points that I can use in any which way I want.
Right.
It is, it's more for durable purchases that it kind of changes that functionality. And there is right now a limit of 100 in-app offers per app.
So I think that's important to as a takeaway for developers to know. In-app purchases is really meant to be a known list of things that they're going to be putting. It's not their warehouse with an open door on the back that's all things are always coming in. That's a different scenario. And what is the solution for developers?
The solution there is unfortunately we don't have a solution baked in using kind of our commerce platform. But this is where kind of our commitment to having kind of an open ecosystem and open platform plays in. If you have your own commerce system that you use for those purchases today, you can continue to use that. There's some base requirements like making sure that you're doing your transactions over HTTPS things of that nature. But if you want to do the fulfillment and do the transaction processing yourself, you are free to do so.
So there are no rules around the store about using outside commerce engines. We can use them as well.
You can use them. There are a couple rules around requiring users to authenticate that they actually are, you know, that you can't have a drive-by, I'm just going to buy a bunch of stuff and put it on your credit card because you left your machine unlocked for 5 minutes. So things of that nature, things for consumer protection. But there's no, as long as it meets those
but
technical requirements.
Who you use and things like that. I mean, it doesn't always have to be Microsoft is what the thing.
No,
so,
it does not.
If I make my app $1.49, is there a way for me to use a third party commerce engine than to actually fulfill that $1.49?
I'm not sure I quite get that question.
If
your
app has a price,
if your app has a price, the commerce goes through us.
It's Microsoft's commerce platform.
It goes to the Microsoft the Windows Store commerce system.
Okay. But inside, as I'm doing in-app purchases, as I might be selling commodities, even doing trial upgrades and things like that, I can handle that through my own preferred commerce platform. If
you want to, you definitely can. In that case, your app would be listed as a free app in the store, and then you're kind of doing all of that commerce within your application.
I could do $1 million worth of commerce inside my app and never split anything with Microsoft.
That is correct.
And that doesn't ding me, right? I'm not breaking the rules.
You're not breaking any rules.
That's pretty crazy.
We look at that and then we go, I mean, we think that we have a pretty economical solution for most developers, especially as you try to get into worldwide reach in that. But we recognize that some of you have your own billing system. Some of you have your
investments
own
investments they've already made.
Some of you have your own relationships with customers that you already have those payment instruments on file and you already have a mechanism there. We're not going to tell you how you need to do your business. We hope that we are providing, if you're a new person coming in, we hope that our offering is going to be competitive and the one that you choose.
So not only does the store have this insane reach, this generous split, but we also have this crazy flexibility that we let developers do whatever it really is best for their app. That's what we're saying.
Why is that crazy?
I don't know. It seems crazy. It seems crazy because we're all like conditioned to like, you know, it's all, anyway, it doesn't matter, right? Yeah. We're changing the world here. Now, let me ask you this. I'm using the Microsoft platform, right? The commerce platform. Subscriptions. Can I sell an app for an ongoing price?
So you can't sell an app for an ongoing price. What you can do is you can have in-app offers that expire. So there's no kind of recurring, it will charge you every month. But in a model where you want to offer a month's worth of service and then have the user be able to buy it again next month, you can do that. It doesn't meet all of those needs. It's not. It's by no means the perfect solution for all kind of service-based and kind of subscription-based offerings. But it enables some of those scenarios, some of those kind of rental access to premium content in your app for a period of time type scenarios.
Let me ask you real quick, just to make sure I got this clear. So I can have an in-app purchase that expires, and then a month from now or whatever period I pick, I assume, it'll prompt them again, and they can just purchase again, but it's not recurring.
It's not recurring. So it's not that it will prompt them again. It's that you as a developer, when you in your code, you will know that they don't have access to it anymore. So now you can decide to prompt them again, or you can decide to maybe they bought the month package last time. Let's try to see if they're now willing to buy the year-long package, right? So those are kind of the business rules and the things that you can kind of expose. It's not an ongoing recurring payment, but it is the ability to kind of have some knowledge of those time-based payments.
Is there a way for me to take my app, and I know it's really meant for a smaller audience, can I put it in a special place in the store, like a secret private place, and just hand out URLs to the people I know want it?
No. So right now there is no capability for kind of having hidden apps in the store. This is really around making your apps available to everybody. Now, obviously your app may have some authentication that you need to do inside the app, right? It's a mail client. It connects to a service. It does that. So you're free to do that. If you're going to do that, you're going to want to pass along information to the reviewers on how they can log into the app in order to be able to test it effectively when we do certification of the app. Yeah. But that is a potential solution, but those apps are going to show up for everybody.
So the store is the public store. That's the takeaway, right?
Yeah.
It's a public open store.
There's no hidden secret sauce. All of our apps go through there. All of your apps go through there. This is the way apps get out to Windows 8.
It's like picture the Microsoft store in the mall, right? I mean, everything, there's no secret door in the back where you go have other products. They're all right there for anybody who walks in. I think that's a good takeaway because there's a bit of confusion around the Windows Phone store does some things like that. And so this is good for, there's so much advantage if you're a Windows Phone developer. You have so much, you know, understanding in advance of how we're doing things in Windows 8. This is one of those things that kind of catches them sometimes, I think. Now, if I am a developer on Windows Phone, I know that there's a developer license in order to put an app into the store. That's the same thing in Windows 8, right? Or the Windows Store.
It is the same thing. I guess one of the differences is that getting the Windows 8 developer license is not tied to kind of creating the a subscription with the Windows Store as a developer. So you can start developing your app and get a developer license to kind of build your app locally in that. before you ever signed up for the a connection with the store.
Oh, okay. So you're talking about the developer license that lets you use basically Visual Studio
yep.
to build a Windows 8 app. Then there's an additional piece that we're talking about that actually costs money
yep.
in order to put it into the Windows Store. If I'm currently putting it into the phone store, those are not the same, right?
Those are not the same right now. No.
Okay. And let me ask you this. I noticed there are two different licenses or two different, what do you call it, accounts into the store accounts?
Yeah, I guess dashboards, subscriptions, I don't know. There's a bunch of different words.
Whatever those are, there are two of them. There's one for a person yeah. and one for a company. The price is different. Mm-hmm. You know, one is right around $50, $49, and the other is $199. What's the difference? Why would I pick one over the other? It seems to me I'd always want the cheaper.
I think it really boils down to how you're doing your business. Are you doing it as a business and as a corporation or as an individual? There are certain features that are also and certain capabilities for apps that are only available for corporations. So what we have,
tell me those. Like what?
We have sensitive capabilities. So for example, access to the enterprise credentials.
So if I want enterprise credentials checked in my app manifest, I have to be deploying it into the store. As a
corporation, yep.
Oh, that's
part of it is we have additional validation that we can do with a corporation. There's a little bit more a level of trust.
Right.
There's a different level of validation that can be done as opposed to you are John Doe with a valid credit card and that.
Go through some other capabilities that you know off the top of your head
I think that access to the documents library, I believe, is in that.
Documents library? Wow. What about the intranet? Probably the intranet as well.
I actually don't know about the intranet. I don't.
You know what? Let's not guess. We'll make sure that we get a link right on the page.
There's a link to that, and it really describes what the differences between those are. The other reason that you potentially want to do that is if you're a business and you're in Europe, then you've got a VAT ID, so you've already paid VAT, so we can pay out the taxes more appropriately for you. There's tax implications for how you're going to get paid, things of that nature. So if you're in the U.S. and you're going to enter your Social Security number as the as your tax payout stuff, then you're going to probably be an individual account. If you've got EIN and that, and you want to really get taxed at the business rate and all that, you're going to want to sign up as a company account.
And neither you nor I assume, Eric, neither of us are attorneys, but if your app is going to get to that 80-20 split and you're making more than $25,000, you should at least really, really consider going in as a company because there are tax implications.
There are, but I look at that and, you know, contact your tax professional.
That's right. That's right. So, they'll give you some advice.
I'm sure they will.
Now, you give me some advice. I'm about to deliver an app into the market. I know that I can't sell it as the volume license, right? But I do think someday I want to keep track of those seats. What's some advice you give to developers who are building those types of apps?
So one of the things that's interesting is one of the capabilities that we give with store apps and via our API set is the ability to get a receipt. So you as a developer can kind of request a receipt for the person running the app that actually validates that. You can pass that up to your service. If you have authentication on your service, and that actually lets you keep track of the number of users that are using it. So if, for example, you're writing some CRM software and you run a service that you're going to expose that out for businesses to run, the app may be free in the store, but you actually have a separate deal with them. Go get the app from there. That's the way you manage the app. That's the way users interact with the app. But billing and licensing is going to happen by I'm going to give you 10 seats. I'm going to give you 10 accounts that can log in. And once those 10 accounts log in, you know, it's not going to work anymore. So, and you can identify users versus machines, and you can kind of do that. Now, it is unique. You can only find out about your app. So you don't know that that user.
If another app is installed.
If you have two apps on the thing and you look at two receipts, they're going to look completely different. It gives you as the app developer the ability to kind of uniquely identify a user.
When I ask for that unique device ID, it's a combination of my app, so I can't correlate that across different apps.
Correct. So you can't. So from a consumer perspective, there's a value that says this isn't being used for kind of nefarious purposes to kind of cross-reference and do a bunch of targeted advertising that I never signed up to be willing to allow have happen. This is really a way for kind of developers to hit some of their base needs.
And that's perfect, actually. If I need to correlate, I can correlate the user. And then I keep all those receipts, and there's a lot developers can do, basically.
Yep.
Okay. Let's just hit some big ones right now. The Windows Store is open. It's not pending. Okay, that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's open for everybody.
And the and it's separate from the phone store. That's a common question that we get.
Yes,
beautiful.
Sir.
And if a developer needs to learn more, what's the URL you send them to?
Where I send them to is to the Dev Center, right? So it's
dev.windows.com?
Dev.windows.com. And that gets you started with how to build apps. There's a big chunk about kind of selling your apps, and that really has a lot of information on both the certification requirements, some of the design guidelines, the differences between individual and business accounts,
yeah,
all of that fun stuff. How to do, you know, samples on how to do trials, in-app purchases, all that fun stuff.
Perfect. Thanks, Tariq. Man, this has been so informative. You know so much about the store, and there are so many questions. Developers know there's like an unbelievable amount of opportunity, and you know, at its foundation core is the store. How to deliver it, how to handle updates, how to fulfill commerce, all these things. Thanks for coming on the show, Tariq. I really appreciate it. And to you, the listener, thanks for watching.